I am your host, Tony McDonald, and this is Texas Scorecard Radio. This week in the 1836 studios, we have State Rep Matt Schaefer, chairman of the Texas Freedom Caucus, a band of conservatives that are turning the Texas House upside down. Later, we have a commentary from Michael Quinn Sullivan about a disturbing trend of left-wing violence that's sweeping the nation. But before that, we'll jump around the state and talk with the Texas Scorecard local bureaus about news and events impacting all corners of the Lone Star State. Welcome to this week's Texas Scorecard Radio. We'll get started talking to the Texas Scorecard local bureaus. I have in the studio Greg Harrison. Greg heads up the Central Texas Bureau for Texas Scorecard. Greg, you've been writing a little bit about forced annexation. What's that issue about?
That's right, Tony. So annexation, as a lot of people know, is the mechanism whereby municipalities will incorporate new voters into their tax base. And this isn't an issue that you hear a lot of people talking about until they're really... they find themselves in the targets of a city, but truth be told, it's a very big property rights issue, and it's something that we as Texans really need to be addressing. So currently under Texas law, these municipalities, a lot of whom are trying to cover up for spending problems, do not have to gain any consent from homeowners that they're trying to annex into their tax base, which means these homeowners, many of whom deliberately lived outside of city limits, find their tax rate going just skyrocketing as a result of now being a, you know, for example, City of San Antonio taxpayer when they lived outside. Now they've got new zoning regulations to deal with, building codes, permitting processes, et cetera, et cetera.
So they find themselves almost kind of invaded and kind of grabbed up by
exactly,
the city.
That's exactly right.
By a city basically they didn't choose to be a part of.
Right, paying for debt that they've had no say in accruing, subject to a city council they didn't vote for. It's a very un-American practice when you really break it down.
So what's the why are the cities doing this? Is it all about revenue?
Absolutely. It's all about revenue. In fact, I mean, you know, take San Antonio for example. They had some really like any big municipality, they've got a lot of spending problems. And I think they were using annexation to cover it in such an aggressive manner that even their police and fire came out against it. And I've talked to some people with the San Antonio Fire Department, and they said that they have radios that can't even effectively reach the newly annexed areas.
Wow.
Because they have just been so aggressively expanding to cover their spending problems.
So is there a proposed solution to this?
Yeah, and it's quite simple, really elegant. Just let them vote. It's just a matter of letting these homeowners vote on whether or not they want to be part of this city. It really is that simple.
Wow, okay. Well, thank you for that report, Greg. We'll switch gears and go down to the Bayou City and speak with Reagan Reed with the Houston, Texas Scorecard Bureau. Reagan, what's this issue about rent-a-voters?
That's a good question. It's a really important issue and something that not a lot of taxpayers are aware of. Basically, the rent-a-voter scheme is where well-connected developers will lobby a legislator to create a special purpose taxing district in an area they're wanting to develop. Then they'll draw the boundaries to make sure there are no current voters in the district. Then the developers will bring in hired voters and pay them to live in trailers in the district temporarily. These rent-a-voters, as they're called, register to vote and list the trailers as their address. The rent-a-voters will then approve millions, often billions of dollars in debt and taxes for the new district. And then they'll pack up and leave and move on to a new district and repeat the process again.
Wow.
And then the debt will be paid for by future residents who move into new developments in the district.
So we literally have people being paid to live in a house or somewhere and then vote to approve a certain amount of debt. Is this legal? How is this legal?
Well, Texas voter residency law is really complicated. But technically, this is legal under Texas law. The Supreme Court has ruled that only two things, bodily presence and intention, are necessary to qualify a place as a person's legal residence. And so the little loophole they use to get around, I guess, a normal residence, and so it's technically legal.
Wow. So they're not paying them to vote yes, but I guess they wouldn't get another gig if they voted the other way, huh?
I don't suppose that they would, no.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess the real problem here, this sounds like, you know, taxation without representation. You know, people are going to be paying these fees and paying these taxes down the line, but the folks who are approving it have no stake in that.
That's exactly what it is. So this is a way for the developers to get around the will of the voters. They know that voters in a normal electorate would probably not be inclined to vote for tax increases and higher debt, and so this is a way for them to get around it and pass all this stuff without having to make their case to actual voters.
Wow, that's something that really needs reform. Well, thank you for that report, Reagan. We'll switch gears and go down south to the Rio Grande Valley, talk with Miriam Cepeda, head of the Texas Scorecard Rio Grande Valley Bureau. Miriam, you have a report about Governor Greg Abbott's recent visit down to the valley. Tell us a little bit about that trip.
Yes, Governor Greg Abbott recently launched his reelection campaign in San Antonio. And the following day, he ventured down to the Rio Grande Valley in the city of McAllen to participate in what they called a Super Saturday block walk event with the goal of knocking on 10,000 doors statewide.
So was Governor Abbott himself actually going door to door and talking to voters?
Yes, the governor himself and his wife Cecilia were block walking in the Benson Heights neighborhood as he discussed his priorities such as protecting law enforcement, opposing sanctuary cities, and the employment of veterans.
Wow. You know, I know, one of the top issues with voters is border security and controlling illegal immigration, not only amongst Republican voters, but, all voters. So we've seen more and more officials kind of taking an interest down in the valley. Are you seeing more and more of these visits from statewide officials down to your area?
Yes, statewide and also national Republican lawmakers and a little bit of Democratic lawmakers as well have ventured down to the Rio Grande Valley to truly understand the fiscal and economic impact that their policies up in the Capitol or even in Austin will have here in the Rio Grande Valley. And I can literally list different lawmakers that have come down. The most recent and the most frequent would be Senator Cruz and Senator Cornyn. They both have participated in border security roundtable discussions with local law enforcement and Border Patrol officials, and have also ventured into the South Texas heat on Border Patrol tours.
Yeah, I know Republicans kind of underperform down there in the valley. It's one of the areas of the state that Democrats typically win. Do you think that Republicans can actually win votes and win the majority down there with not only with Hispanic voters, but with voters in South Texas in general?
Yes, I strongly believe that as the Republican Party and Republican officials continue to visit this area and give a little attention to this area that's usually forgotten by Republican lawmakers, as we are known as the bluest part in Texas. But by giving attention and educating the public, and especially the Hispanics, as their ideas and their ideologies are conservative, such as especially being pro-life and also those that are pro-Second Amendment.
Yeah.
And by giving attention to this area, which being a Hispanic myself, we just appreciate just a little bit of attention and accepting the invitation to our area. And by giving attention once again, I believe Hispanics and voters in general are taking notice of the effort by Republican lawmakers to come down to this area we call home.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for that report, Miriam. I'll remind listeners, you can read reports from Miriam and from Greg and from Reagan and from all the writers with Texas Scorecard and with our local bureaus being published on a day-to-day basis. All of those reports coming out at texasscorecard.com. All right, it's great to have in the studio Representative Matt Schaefer, chairman of the Texas Freedom Caucus. Good to have you in the studio, Matt.
Good to be here, Tony. Thanks for having me.
Now, tell listeners a little bit about who you are. Before we talk about the Freedom Caucus, I'd like to learn a little bit about who you are.
I kind of like to think of myself as a blue-collar guy that's kind of in a white-collar job these days, serving in the legislature. I sixth-generation Texan. Grew up out in the country. We went through some hard times financially growing up when my dad got laid off in the oil patch back in the 80s. We didn't have much money, but we had a lot of 22 shells, and we had a pretty good life out in the country, and went on to play a little football in college, junior college, and then went to Texas Tech and got a finance degree, and then later on ended up working for a great economist named Phil Graham, who actually taught me a lot about free markets and what that meant to the United States and to freedom and what it meant to the world. And that whet my appetite a little bit for the political world. But I went back out in the private sector, got a law degree, and at the same time joined the Navy Reserves.
And you're still in the Navy Reserves.
I'm still in Navy Reserves. Yeah, I got married, went to law school, joined the Navy Reserves all at the same time. I don't recommend that to everybody. but did all of that. And later on, after being practicing law privately for a few years, I got called up to go to Afghanistan and went out and stomped around near the Iranian border in Afghanistan, did a tour there. And then when I moved back to Texas after that deployment, and there was a guy named Leo Berman who was serving as a state rep there in Tyler and had told people he was going to retire. And a lot of the grassroots supporters that had helped him get elected came to me and said, we'd like for you to consider running. And, the Lord had really laid that on my heart. And the rest is history. Yeah. So here I am.
So your first session was in 2013, and so you did a couple sessions I guess before Freedom Caucus, and then this session came out and was elected as the chairman of the Texas Freedom Caucus. That was in February.
Yes.
of 2017. So the Freedom Caucus has been a really interesting thing to see it take the Capitol by storm to some degree. It's a small group, just 12 state representatives, but having an outsized impact on the Texas House of Representatives and in the Texas Capitol. I guess the question to ask is, and maybe you can talk a little bit about what the Freedom Caucus is and what your goals are with it, but why is a Freedom Caucus really necessary in Texas? We have this reputation as the reddest of red states, a reputation of being this super conservative place. Why is a small band of conservative legislators necessary in what should be, a conservative state and a conservative legislative body?
When I first came to the legislature in 2013, I voted no a lot compared to my colleagues. And I noticed, I was only voting no like 25 or 30% of the time. I mean, always really voting yes a lot on stuff. But even just voting no 25 or 30% of the time, you realize that saying no to government stuff that often was out of the norm for Austin. The truth is that Texas government is big, and it reaches into a lot of areas of people's lives.
Budget over $200 billion.
Yeah, it's a huge budget, huge amount of regulation that actually exists at the state level. Everything from crazy burdens on occupational licensing for barbers and auctioneers and people who float teeth on horses. You get all kinds of stuff where you can see where business interests have come down here and hired lobbyists and set up a special deal for them and made it tough on the guy who is trying to run this business out of the front seat of his pickup with a spiral notebook. I knew a lot of guys like that, and I saw bills come forward that would basically make some of those guys not just be violating a civil regulation, but make them criminals. And I thought, man, there's some stuff my brother and I did to make money that people wanted us to work, and we did a good job. But, man, somebody could have come in and accused us of not doing something by the book and gotten us arrested or gotten us fined. And you just realize that, liberty is still a difficult thing, even in the state of Texas. And compared to other states, we're in good shape in a lot of ways. But, man, I wanted to really dig in and find ways to expand the field of freedom in the state of Texas. We've got a lot of work still left to do. So you ask why we formed the Freedom Caucus. Is one thing you realize is that those grassroots folks back home, and when I say that, I'm talking about the folks that, they're working every day just to take care of their families, fulfill their responsibilities at work, pay their bills, and have a little bit of time to maybe show up to a Tea Party meeting or participate in a Republican club. or you know, speak to you at church when they grab you. And some of them actually show up to the Republican convention once, you know, every couple of years and help develop the party platform because they actually care about what the Republican Party platform stands for. Those folks don't have any interest that's hardwired into Austin, into the Capitol. And so we formed the Freedom Caucus to say we are going to bind ourselves to cooperation with the grassroots. We are going to make it our mission to support the grassroots and amplify their voice. And so kind of the way we have a three-point way we talk about it, we say we want to focus on first principles.
What do you mean by first principles?
First principles are those things that that limited government, that our rights come to us from God, and the Constitution just outlines restraints on government, and all the other rights are inherent, and that we really believe in those first principles. We believe in markets. We believe in individual liberty and individual responsibility, and we're human. We mess up on some of that stuff. But we wanted to really try to have a plumb line that says, stay close to this guide, and the grassroots are so good at helping us with that.
How does that view and that kind of commitment to first principles to the grassroots differ from other legislators who are in Austin? Who, you know, obviously there's only 12 of 150. House members who are part of the Freedom Caucus, so that's 138 who are not. How does that differ, or how do, you know, without having to pick on anybody particular?
It's a fair question. Look, there's 12 of us that were the reason we joined the caucus because we were really dedicated to this particular effort with the grassroots. Now, you draw a circle around the 12 of us. Look, there's another circle that's even larger where there's a lot of liberty-minded conservatives out there on particular issues. But it's still right now. I don't know that it's a majority of the House. I mean, the House is 150 members, and the way the House chooses its Speaker of the House, the leader of the House, he's not elected by the public. He's elected by the 150 members, and the way Speaker Joe Strauss became Speaker was by cutting a deal with all the Democrats and a handful of middle of the road moderate Republicans. And became Speaker, and then from then on, he had the power. He could give out the chairmanships. He could give the committee assignments. He could help people with their bills that helped their districts or whatever and make sure that they got money when they ran for re-election. And it's a pretty easy way to hold on to power. Yeah. And that's what it is.
Well, I mean, whenever you came to Austin in 2013, were you surprised to see kind of how polarized the different segments of the Republican caucus were? And what I mean by that is you see – you look at maybe the Mark Jones Rice University study where you rank Republicans and you say, okay, the most liberal Republicans seem to all be the ones who are getting the Appropriations Committee spots, who are getting the Calendars Committees, you know, the powerful positions. And then you're seeing conservatives, the most conservative members on those rankings, you know, basically being blocked out of the legislative process from being able to pass bills. I mean, was that surprising to you or you know, is that kind of part of the motivation here is to kind of step forward and say, okay, we're going to do something about that?
It's what's happening. If you're a liberty-minded conservative in the Texas House right now, you're marginalized. You're kind of put over in the corner. So it's kind of a survival mechanism to work together. And we've been successful with some maneuvers that we did during the session where we were able to use the House rules to our advantage. That, you know, once a bill got to the floor, it was a bill that we liked, but it was a weak bill.
Sure.
Well, you know, the right of a member is to bring an amendment. And so at that point, they can't cut us out of the process. We can bring an amendment, stand up on the House floor. And now our Republican colleagues are realizing that we're echoing things that they've been hearing even in their districts. And these guys have got the courage to bring this amendment. And they agree with it, and we won some votes over and against leadership who didn't want that particular part of the bill to pass. Things like, you know, when we made Sanctuary Cities bill a lot stronger.
Right, yeah, kind of a case study there of being able to move a bill in a more conservative direction. And I guess it goes back to this idea of aligning yourselves with the grassroots. And so whenever you're prioritizing something that grassroots voters – not just in your district, but in Tyler, you know, but in West Texas and South
well,
Texas,
right.
elsewhere, these are the things that they want. Well, all of a sudden, the representative who might not be inclined to vote for your amendment on a personal level suddenly goes, well, this is what my voters want.
Well, and the grassroots are a force multiplier, okay? And they're connected. They do their own networking around the state. And so as we plug into that and they see the work we're doing, the influence spreads to other members in the legislature. So they're able to go to their state representative and say, hey, here's a conservative bill that's not moving, or here's a conservative bill that should get a hearing, or here's a bad bill that should be killed in committee. And, you know, we send out a phone call or a Facebook post, and we're able to influence policy that way because the people around the state are actually paying attention and are a lot smarter than people than some of the media and others give them credit for.
Yeah, so you're actually connecting directly through social media with people rather than trying to go through traditional, you're not going to Associated Press reporters and trying to get them to write about the things you're doing.
And that's the other thing is we didn't have a voice, okay, so in the chamber. So when there would be something that the leadership would do that was not in line with conservative principles, okay, so they're doing the non-conservative thing. Well, the media, who would they go talk to? Well, one individual member here or there, or they go find somebody outside the chamber. They go talk to Michael Quinn Sullivan or Jim Graham with Texas Right to Life, or Tim Lambert with the Homeschool Coalition. They have to go find somebody outside. So when we formed the Freedom Caucus, they actually started coming to us and asking us what was the conservative, viewpoint on this. And that's been a wonderful development is that we're actually now the media, because we've had some success, the media is actually saying, okay, we don't like these guys, we're not going to write nice things about them, but hey, they represent enough people, we'll go talk to them.
Yeah, and then you can frame the debate on these various issues that are coming forward. How has the caucus been received within the chamber from other Republicans, I guess from the Democrats as well? What has the reception been like, and has that changed, since you came out in the early part of the session?
I think when we first started, it was a bit of an icy reception. maybe other members looking at it say, well, you guys are just trying to, distinguish yourselves and make us look bad. And that was never the goal, because there are other groups within the Republican members. There's Texas Conservative Coalition that, they hit some good base hits every now and then, and we want to complement, not compete with what they're doing. So we weren't trying to say, hey, we're better than any other group. We're just saying, hey, we have this particular thing we're doing with the grassroots. And as the session wore on, I think that as they saw some of the things that we were doing, even if they didn't agree with everything we did, I think there's a healthy respect among our Republican colleagues for what we're doing.
So the group open to new members, or are people joining as they, I guess there's people gearing up to run for office now. Are you hoping to have to grow the Freedom Caucus in the next session?
I think we will grow. It's invitation only. We do have a set of bylaws, and we have a process to bring new people in. We're more interested in good liberty-minded people who are really motivated to join this effort than we are just saying, oh, we need to have 30 members, or oh, we need to have a certain number. We want to just have people who really, truly care about what we're doing with the grassroots.
Well, it'll be exciting to see how the group grows and the successes that y'all continue to have. Give listeners at home the website for the Freedom Caucus.
It's freedomfortexas.com. That's freedom, F-O-R, texas.com. And you can also look up the Freedom Caucus on Facebook and Twitter, and we put some things out there. And it's interesting, Tony, we've actually been getting phone calls from legislators and groups in other states who are asking how we're doing what we're doing and wanting to get tips from us and are excited about what's happening in Texas. We've had them from New Hampshire, Alabama, you name it. We've had them calling and asking, you know, what's going on with the Texas Freedom Caucus?
Well, freedom is popular in Texas nationwide and going worldwide, I guess. So anyway, well, thank you so much for coming in the studio today with us, Representative Matt Schaefer. Again, freedomfortexas.com, Texas Freedom Caucus. Thank you for joining us. It's a pleasure having you out.
Thank you, Tony.
Texas Scorecard Radio is a project of Empower Texans. At texasscorecard.com or empowertexans.com, you can find more news and daily updates from all around the Lone Star State. You can also find updates from Empower Texans and Texas Scorecard on Facebook and Twitter, and follow Empower Texans on Instagram. Texas Scorecard's news digest goes out weekly via email and monthly in print. Subscribe online and find more information at empowertexans.com. Someone's always keeping score. We think it ought to be the taxpayers.
Last but not least, we'll go to a commentary from Michael Quinn Sullivan. Michael's going to tell us a little bit about a very disturbing trend of left-wing violence that's sweeping the nation.
Which party is the party of hate? Hi, I'm Michael Quinn Sullivan with Empower Texans and today's commentary. Our nation was rocked this summer by the attempted assassination of a large group of Republican lawmakers and their staff. Zach Barth, a Texan who works as an aide to Texas's Roger Williams, was wounded in the attack. The would-be assassin was a left-wing activist who's been absorbing and repeating the hate-filled rhetoric of Democrat office holders and their apologists to the mainstream media. None of this should surprise us. After months of Democrats and leftist pundits excusing and even tacitly endorsing liberal activist riots and civic disruptions, the attempted assassination of Republican office holders was only a matter of time. Right here in the Lone Star State, a Democrat in the Texas legislature, Ramon Romero of Fort Worth, was captured on video cheering on a left-wing mob that had been gathered in the House gallery. That mob was there specifically to disrupt the legislative process on the last day of the regular session. Another Democrat then verbally threatened a Republican lawmaker who'd called the authorities. Video of the scuffle on the House floor that followed shows Democrat lawmakers pursuing and assaulting the Republican while other members worked to restrain the attackers. Let's be clear, the mob that Romero was supporting that descended on the Texas House wasn't there to stop passage of a bill. The measure they were ostensibly protesting had passed weeks earlier. They were there only to disrupt and provoke. Earlier in the year, pro-abortion activists threatened the life of Republican State Representative Tony Tinderholt of Arlington and his family. Tinderholt was forced to acquire police protection for his wife and newborn baby while he served his community in Austin. A quarter century since last winning a statewide race in Texas, Democrats have driven themselves further out of touch with Texans by adopting views contrary to our culture and tactics reprehensible to civilized people. Nationally, a liberal D-list comedian performed a mock beheading of the Republican president, while a theater group thought it would be fun to have a look-alike actor play the role of Caesar so he could be brutally and graphically murdered on stage. As Americans become less and less interested in the policy proposals of liberal Democrats, the party has seemingly turned to violence as a substitute. The progressive movement has declared war on the rule of law and anyone who stands firm defending it. A once proud pro-American political institution, Democrats have rapidly devolved into a party of unabashed hatred and violence. It's been frighteningly short on progression, from riots on college campuses, protesting conservative speakers, to threatening a legislator for making a phone call, to attempted assassinations on a baseball field in Alexandria. Until Democrats check their unhinged rhetoric against conservatives and push back against the violent tendencies stemming from their authoritarian ideology, Americans will reject them as a party as surely as we are rejecting their failed policies. With today's commentary, I'm Michael Quinn Sullivan.
Well, that's a wrap on this week's episode of Texas Scorecard Radio. As a reminder, listeners can read the reports that we put out on a daily basis, news from across the Lone Star State, at texasscorecard.com. You know, at Texas Scorecard, we know that somebody's always keeping score. We think it should be the taxpayers.